Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Mr. James A. Farmer, National Director of the Congress of Racial Equality and one of its founders. Under his direction, CORE has pioneered such tactics as the Freedom Rides, the sit-ins, and the jail-ins. We'll bring you today's program in a moment.
Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your traveling friend. In your home, in your pocket or car, dial a smile wherever you are. Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your faithful friend. Sports and weather and news as it's made, your favorite music's always played on radio. Your constant companion. Radio, your family friend. Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your family friend.
Chet Huntley's perspective on the news gives you fresh insight into today's headlines. In this age of fast-moving worldwide events, the news story itself, or spot news, is often not enough for you to make an intelligent evaluation of late-breaking developments. Chet Huntley's perspective on the news evaluates the news behind the news, enables you to assess vital world events in the light of thorough expert analysis and comment. Chet Huntley's perspective on the news, weekdays on NBC Radio. And now, Meet the Press. Today's guest, James A. Farmer, National Director of the Congress of Racial Equality, CORE. Mr. Farmer is one of the most militant leaders of the current Negro revolt. Our panel consists of Lawrence Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Anthony Lewis of the New York Times, Dwight Sargent of the New York Herald Tribune, William Rusher of the National Review. Edwin Newman of NBC News is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is James A. Farmer, National Director of CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, and one of its founders. Mr. Farmer has gained a reputation as one of the most militant leaders of the Negro revolt. Under his leadership, CORE has pioneered such tactics as freedom rides, sit-ins, and jail-ins. Now we'll have the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak.
Mr. Farmer, you keep warning the American people that this summer is going to be a longer and hotter summer than the country has ever seen as far as race relations go. Now, is this a threat of more and more demonstrations, or is it a prediction of real serious trouble?
Mr. Spivak, it's not a threat at all. It is a prediction of serious trouble to come because of the buildup of frustration and anger in the Negro community. That frustration and anger has built up because such little progress has been made within the past year to make a significant breakthrough in civil rights. Also, there is the fact that the resistance of the segregationist has increased, and the segregationists have organized in the North as well as in the South. And because of this impasse, unless our nation does something to solve the problems of discrimination in employment, in housing, in schools, then I think there will be a long, hot summer.
Mr. Farmer, there are some observers who say that the Negro Revolution is gaining alarming momentum and that nothing will stop it short of bloodshed. Now, are you one of those?
Well, I certainly would not agree with the adjective alarming there. I think that momentum for the civil rights revolution is a good thing, something to be desired. The more momentum we gather, then the greater are our chances of achieving success. I think that we need momentum. We need the thrust. We need the drive.
Now, what do you think is the minimum that must be done to stop the demonstrations and to take people off the streets?
Well, now, I don't think that anything is going to stop the demonstrations until we've achieved full equality in our country, until we're first-class citizens, until a man is judged not upon the basis of the color of his skin, but upon his individual merit. The passage of the Civil Rights Bill will be a step in that direction. But we must understand that this bill, even if passed without being watered down, will merely give us a useful tool with which to work. It will not solve the problems. The millennium will not be here yet.
You say the demonstrations will go on until the Negro gets full equality. Do you mean full equality, or do you mean equality of opportunity?
I mean full equality. I mean equal rights. I mean there must be a recognition of the equality of man in our country, and that whatever rights and whatever privileges any other citizen has, This I would ask for myself, and these are the demands of the Negro Revolution.
May I take you for a moment to the Civil Rights Bill? When the Civil Rights Bill was first introduced, Senator Humphrey on this program told us that there would be no compromise. Do you see any danger now that there will be compromise on some of the fundamentals?
I think there is a great danger of that. I look with particular misgivings upon the attempts to modify the bill by weakening amendments. A number of those amendments have been proposed, and I think that if the amendments are adopted, that they will cut the heart out of the bill and render it meaningless.
And what is CORE going to do about it in advance?
Well, we, of course, have notified all of our chapters and our members throughout the country to get in touch with their senators and let them know that we demand cloture now. We demand immediate passage of the bill before summer, certainly. And we plan to call upon our chapters to send persons to Washington, D.C. around the end of this month or the 1st of June for some nonviolent demonstrations to support immediate adoption of cloture and quick passage of the bill.
Now, in your meeting recently in Philadelphia, you promised to start dramatic and nonviolent demonstrations. Now, what do you mean by dramatic demonstrations exactly?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I think the word speaks for itself. Most of CORE demonstrations are dramatic. What could be more dramatic than the Freedom Rides, than the sit-ins? What could be more dramatic than the mass marches which CORE has conducted? We believe in demonstrations along those lines which capture the imagination of the public and point out clearly the issues which we have in mind.
Were you going to have a sit-in in the Senate?
No, I am not detailing precisely what we have in mind, except to say that whatever we do in Washington will be disciplined, will be orderly, will be peaceful and nonviolent.
Mr. Farmer, some questions about the situation in the North. You've just told Mr. Spivak that resistance of the segregationists has increased during the last year, including the North. Now, can you really say it comes only from segregationists? For example, I think it's fair to say that there's been a good deal of unhappiness among Northern white communities about the proposals of the civil rights movement to bus children from white schools to what are now predominantly Negro schools for the purpose of ending racial imbalance. A great many people are disturbed about that, as the polls and actual voting results show. Aren't you in danger of losing the necessary sympathy and support of the majority white community in this country?
Well, Mr. Lewis, when you raise the issue of busing, I really think that this issue has been greatly overplayed. You know, a few days ago, there was a danger of a strike of bus drivers, school bus drivers. And the press indicated that 90,000 children in the city of New York would not be able to get to school if these buses went on strike. So busing is an integral part of the school system in our country now, in the big cities and in the counties outside of the cities. Actually, our proposals on schools have been much more than busing. We've wanted the Princeton Plan. We've wanted redrawing of school zone lines. We've wanted educational parks. We've wanted quality integrated education. Now, as to our arousing opposition, I don't think that has happened. What has happened is that the continuum, you know, most people are not on one pole or the other. Only a small minority have been strongly against us and a small minority strongly for us. The great bulk of the American citizens are somewhere in the middle, in a range. Well, what has happened that the issue has been joined is that these people have made up their minds. Or if their minds were made up previously, now they're becoming vocal and articulate. I seriously doubt that any significant number of Americans have changed their minds on civil rights within the past year.
Well, that leads me to ask you this, Mr. Farmer. There have been a number of incidents recently disturbing to persons who believe in equal rights, as you put it. For example, the vote in Indiana and Wisconsin for Governor Wallace, Gary, Indiana, I may say, where there was a particularly strong drive against a de facto school segregation and where the voting results showed what I would call a white backlash. The refusal of plumbers in New York to work alongside of Negro and Puerto Ricans, etc. I'm asking you whether you are discouraged at all about the possibility of a genuine multiracial society in this country, or have you come to feel that there just are very deep racial feelings too hard to remove?
Of course, there are many deep racial feelings, but I'm not discouraged at all on this issue. I think, indeed, the white backlash, so-called, has been greatly overplayed and overestimated. You mentioned the plumbers. This is not new. Plumbers have been refusing to work with Negroes and Puerto Ricans for many, many years in New York and in other cities. You mentioned the Wallace vote. Analyze the Wallace vote for a moment. Lou Harris, in one of his recent polls just before the vote in Indiana, pointed out that Wallace was going to get at least 28%. He pointed out also that 2 out of 3 of the people who were going to vote for Wallace said that it had nothing to do with the Civil Rights Bill or Wallace's civil rights views. They were voting against the tax policies of the governor. They were voting against his spending policies, or they were voting against the national administration. In addition, some Republicans planned to move over into the Democratic side in order to embarrass the administration. So I think that this question of the backlash needs to be nailed down. If I may add another word to that, on another Lou Harris poll, he indicates that the support, the public support for the Civil Rights Bill has increased in the last few months rather than decreasing. In April, for example, 70% of the American people, North and South, were in favor of the Civil Rights Bill, while in February, 68% were in favor of it, and last November, 63% were in favor of it. So if this is a backlash, it's moving in the wrong direction. It's moving in our direction.
Mr. Sargent.
Mr. Farmer, I would like to take you back about 70 years and ask you a question relating to Booker T. Washington. In 1893, as we all know, he made that famous speech before the Atlanta Exposition. And in it, he said a number of things that are quite out of tune with the policies of the Negro leaders today. Among other things, he said, "In all things that are purely social, we can be as separate as the fingers, as one as the hand in all things essential to mutual progress." He also said, "No race can prosper till it learns that there is as much dignity in tilling a field as in writing a poem." And he went on to say, "It is at the bottom of life that we must begin and not at the top." I bring this up because I'd like to ask you to what extent Negro leaders have reappraised a man who was for many years one of the great Negro leaders in this country.
Well, I think the reappraisal of Booker T. Washington began even during his lifetime. There were Negro leaders, including W.E.B. Du Bois, who strongly opposed his views. I think we must look at Booker Washington in terms of the historical context. It was right after the Reconstruction period that he became a leader, and he was expressing the view which he thought to be the only reasonable one at that time. There was no possibility of achieving integration. Now there is that possibility. So to express Booker Washington's views now would be hackneyed, outmoded, looking into the past.
Well, Negro children are still taught, are they not, that he made one of the great contributions to Negro progress during his time?
Of course he did, but in his historical context.
Mr. Rusher.
Mr. Farmer, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover recently told the House Appropriations Committee that there is communist influence in the civil rights movement, as perhaps was inevitable given the size and significance of the movement. What is CORE doing, if anything, to keep communists out of its own ranks?
Mr. Rusher, the only thing that surprises me about the communist influence or alleged communist influence is that the communists have not made more headway in the Negro community. The feeling of most Negroes is that it's tough enough in America being black without being black and red at the same time. So the communists have not made much headway. Now, of course, they'll try to get into any viable, moving movement, such as the civil rights movement. They tried to get into the labor movement in the early days of the labor movement, particularly in the 30s. But now I think the civil rights movement is perfectly capable of taking care of that problem. CORE has a clause in its constitution. It has been there since our founding in 1942, which bars from membership all persons who are associated with organizations or with groups whose aims and objectives and philosophies are inimical to those of CORE. That means communists and fascists. I think also that the current trend of many people to say that there are communists throughout the civil rights movement is an attempt belatedly to discredit the civil rights movement and thus to stop it dead.
Is it true that a man named Oliver Leeds is or was an official of Brooklyn CORE?
A man named Oliver Leeds is a member of Brooklyn CORE.
He was named, as you undoubtedly know, on April 30th by a prominent columnist as having been active in the Labor Youth League in the early 1950s, that being on the Attorney General's list of subversive organizations, and as having written letters on Communist Party matters to the Worker and to a New York State Communist Party publication in 1956 and 57. You say he is a member, but not an official of Brooklyn CORE?
He is a member of Brooklyn CORE, yes.
In good standing?
A member in good standing.
and that is on the grounds that he is wanted or desired as a member of your organization?
Mr. Rocha, let me point something out to you. When we say that communists are not allowed into membership in Corps, we do not mean an individual who might in his youth, many years ago, have joined some youth organization which was then communist or later taken over by communists. We believe in human change, the possibility of individual change. As a matter of fact, many of the people who are most strongly anti-communist now were ex-communists. Mr. Leeds informed me of his former association with the Communist Party, a communist youth group. He is not now associated with them.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Farmer, will it affect President Johnson's strength in the coming election if a strong civil rights bill doesn't get through the Congress this time, if the bill is compromised to any extent?
Of course it will. I'm sure that Negroes are going to be politically opportunistic in the next election. Let me explain what I mean. They're going to judge all candidates, not by their words, but by their deeds. And an important part of the deeds of the president will be his success and effectiveness in getting a strong civil rights bill passed. I am sure that the failure to pass a strong bill will work to the detriment of the president.
You think then that a Republican can win a large percentage of the Negro vote today if a strong civil rights bill isn't passed?
I would say this, that many things can happen between now and November, and Negroes are going to be watching those happenings. We don't know who the Republican candidate is going to be, and we will then have to judge and make our decision on the basis of the deeds, of the comparative deeds, of the individuals involved.
I'd like to ask you one question on the school desegregation problem. Within the next 7 days, it'll be 10 years since the Supreme Court said that schools must be desegregated. In spite of that, I think that less than 10% of the Negro children of this country are in white schools. If you had the power, do you think you could desegregate the schools any faster?
If I had the power, certainly I think I could. I think that schools can be desegregated and desegregated quickly if the powers that be have the will to do so and take a firm stand. This was done in a number of borderline cities. It could be done in the Deep South. It can also be done in the North.
Could you do it without wrecking the school system? And if so, how would you do it?
Well, there are a number of ways we'd do it. Our demands of the New York City school system, I think, have been quite clear. We have called for the Princeton plan, which would not wreck the school system. The pairing of elementary schools in adjoining school districts, one being white and the other being Negro, so that kids in the first few grades go to one school regardless of race and the others go to the other. We've called for redrawing the district lines so that we can change the school districts. These things, I think, would not wreck the school system and would provide integration.
Mr. Lewis.
Along that same line, Mr. Farmer, isn't there a danger of having too much emphasis on integration in a school system like New York's and not enough on education? There have been some suggestions that the civil rights movement should concentrate on special programs for slum schools, for example. There's been talk of new kinds of nurseries to raise the levels of all slum children. Is that just out of the picture for the civil rights movement?
Mr. Lewis, I do not see education and integration as being mutually exclusive or contradictory in any sense. I think, on the contrary, in order to have quality education, we must have integration in our society today. And in order to have integration and make it work, we need quality education. Those two things have to go together. And this is our demand now.
There's been so much emphasis on the North recently in the civil rights field that I'm wondering if we've lost sight of the differences between life in the North and in the South for the Negro, or are there any? Can you tell us about that?
Of course there are differences. But the North should not become proud of its superiority over the South in these matters. New York, you know, says that it's better than Chicago. Chicago says it's better than Atlanta. Atlanta is better than Birmingham. Birmingham is better than Johannesburg. It seems to me that the only thing a city should be proud of is being better than its former self. That's why we want Northern cities as well as Southern to improve.
Mr. Sargent.
Mr. Farmer, speaking of being proud of these, of the progress in these various cities, I would like to ask you how proud you are of the Methodists. You're a Methodist yourself. You're the son of a distinguished Methodist preacher, and I'm sure that you've been watching carefully what the Methodist Church has been doing in the past few days. They have voted to eliminate one Negro enclave within the next 4 years. Do you think that this represents real progress on the part of the Methodist Church, or is it simply an effort to salve a troubled Methodist conscience?
I think really, Mr. Sargent, that it represents too slow progress on the part of the church in which I grew up. As a matter of fact, I chose not to be a minister in that church because of continuing segregation there.
Mr. Rusher.
Mr. Farmer, a little while ago, in response to another question, you, I thought, rather minimized the significance of proposals for busing in your plans for the white school children of the country. Mm-hmm. But if I understand correctly from my study of what you have said on other occasions, there would be some busing in your plans for the future of America's white school children, would there not?
There would be some busing, yes.
Now, would you tell me, please, under what circumstances would you favor compulsory busing of white school children from a school near their home to a more distant school?
If it's a part of an overall plan to achieve quality, integrated education, then busing is necessary. But this would be a minimum part of the program.
Well, minimum or maximum,
yes.
You favor the compulsory busing of school children in those circumstances.
Are you aware, Mr. Rusher, that 80% of the buses in our country are school buses?
Oh, yeah, I'm not talking about busing him to the nearest school. Now, let's not confuse the question that way. I'm talking about busing a school child to a more distant school. You do favor that, do you not?
Yes, many of our parents do bus children to a more distant school, to a private school.
Of course, that is their choice. But where it is not a matter of the parent's choice, you still do favor compulsory busing in certain cases, do
you
not?
In certain cases, yes.
Yes.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Farmer, last week you said, and these were your words, police brutality in our city is not a problem which began or ended with the World's Fair. That seems to be an indictment of the whole New York City Police Department for brutality. Did you intend it that way?
It was not intended as an indictment of the whole police department. I do not mean that there is a conspiracy on the part of the police department or the city to brutalize and intimidate Negroes. It's not even a problem confined to New York City, but all over the country, north as well as south. Individual policemen, in a recurrent manner, brutalize individual Negroes, Puerto Ricans, and other minorities in the streets. We want it stopped. We think a civilian review board is the way to do it.
Mr. Lewis.
Farmer, there is this difference between the north and the south. In the north, the political road is open to the Negro. He can vote. Do you think that demonstrations, picketing, of a generalized kind, is justified in the north where you can work through the political medium?
Oh, I think so. I think, really, Mr. Lewis, that we're going to have to work through all media. We're going to have to struggle on every front. We must use demonstrations in order to serve as a walking newspaper, as it were, to let the American citizens know what is going on and what the issues are.
Mr. Sargent?
Mr. Farmer, as a disciple of Gandhi and a student of Thoreau, you have laid commendable emphasis on nonviolence. But you have been quoted as saying that the time might come when, if nonviolence fails, you might consider some form of violence. I hope that I haven't misquoted you there, but could you tell us your idea about how you might judge when a little bit of violence might be proper in order to get the thing moving again?
Well, Mr. Sargent, I have been often misquoted on this. What I actually said in the interview where the quotation came out was precisely what Gandhi had said, namely that I would prefer to have a man resist injustice with violence than to have him fail to resist out of cowardice. I think that is clear.
Gentlemen, we have only about 2 minutes left, so the question should be brief and the answers. Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Farmer, Dr. Martin Luther King has said that there are many things wrong in the Negro world for which the white man cannot be blamed. Do you agree with that?
There are many things wrong in all of our society, including the Negro society.
Will you tell us some of the things that you think are wrong in the Negro world that they themselves might be able to cure?
Well,
now, the Negro leaders have not spoken to their own people, it seems to me, frequently enough. Will you tell us some of those?
Mr. Spivak, one thing is that we have tried for too many years to imitate white society and thus have adopted many of the ills and evils that one finds in the general society. I think that this is a basic problem which has to be dealt with within the Negro community. We have allowed class distinctions to come in and split our people. We must now have a united group.
Mr. Rusher?
Apropos of the so-called white backlash, in Lake County, Indiana, where a majority of the Democrats voted for Governor Wallace in the recent primary, do you interpret the vote there as opposition to taxes or something other than a response to the activities of the Negro leaders in that area?
Well, I don't think it's a response to the activities of the Negro leader. I think what has happened is that there are many white people who, for many, many years, have been opposed to civil rights, but have not had to speak out because the issue has not been joined.
A majority of the Democrats of Lake County, Indiana, are not prejudiced, surely?
Mr. Rusher, you'd be surprised, perhaps, to know how widespread prejudice is in our country. We have little prejudice, we have submerged prejudices, and we have overt prejudices.
But Lake County is a place where there has been specific Negro disturbance recently, isn't it?
I would say that if anybody votes for Mr. Wallace and in opposition to civil rights, that person is manifesting prejudice.
Mr. Sergeant.
Mr. Farmer, what do you expect race relations will be like a quarter of a century hence? I know what you hope, but what do you expect?
A quarter of a century hence? Well, I would say that there'll be many, many changes.
You have a quarter of a minute.
I have a quarter of a minute. I think that we'll find greater political strength on the part of Negroes, especially since these cities are becoming largely populated by minorities as others move away. There will be Negro mayors, there will be some Negro senators, and so forth. I think public discrimination will be at an end.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Farmer, for being with us.
Thank you, Edwin Newman of NBC News. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your traveling friend. In your home, in your pocket or car, dial a smile wherever you are. On radio, your constant companion. Radio, your constant companion. Radio, your constant companion. Radio.
Did you know that there are well over 200 million radios in use around the country, both indoors and out? That means that wherever you go this weekend, you'll have a radio nearby on which you can hear the nation's most popular weekend radio program, NBC's Monitor 64. Monitor is crammed full of new and exciting things each weekend. There's Al Capp, Monitor's talking cartoonist. The Home Show with Arlene Francis. For music, it's The Lively Ones starring Vic Damone. Monitor's Comedy Time features Jonathan Winters, Cliff Arquette as Charlie Weaver, Nichols and May, Ethel and Albert, and Selma Diamond. If you're interested in sports, there's Mel Allen at the Monitor Sports Desk, along with our own Joe Garagiola. At the top of every hour, there's Monitor News, concise, meaningful coverage of world events. So you see, no matter what you like in radio, Monitor has it. And no matter where you go on weekends, Monitor is there to bring it to you. Monitor on NBC Radio. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was National Director of CORE, James Farmer, and the panel consisted of Lawrence Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Anthony Lewis of the New York Times, Dwight Sargent of the New York Herald Tribune, and William Rusher of National Review. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. You know, you can't judge our nation's fitness by the skill of its athletes or by its winning teams. What really matters is the average youngster and his physical capabilities. Does your child get enough vigorous activity at school to keep him in good physical condition? Find out. Talk it over with your school officials and write for the free leaflet put out by the President's Council on Physical Fitness, Washington 25, D.C. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time. The guest will be Governor Mark Hatfield of Oregon. NBC Monitor News, next on the NBC Radio Network.